This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects! Hour number two starts now. It's Nick and myself. Barry's off today as we roll through a Tuesday. I mentioned before the break, Nicholas, that the Texans have made a huge hire, being a trendsetter
really?
In the league. Massive news down on Kirby. Yes, I didn't know that there was even such a thing, but the Texans are hiring a facility hygiene coordinator. They are going to be the first team in the NFL, according to our good friend Sarah Barshop, who talked to Jack Easterby, who was in conversations with the Sports Business Journal, that they are hiring this employee who will run coronavirus risk mitigation throughout the Texans' facilities and is the first known case of a major U.S. pro sports team hiring a dedicated industrial hygiene expert.
See, not that I can prove this, but that last part, you know, the first known case, first known position in a sports franchise made me feel like that was just like a, not necessarily a headline, but something the Texans might have been doing just to show that, you know, to brag and present themselves in a positive light. I'm a prematurely poo-poo on this, but I would like to think that the person that they're hiring is a medical doctor, because what is he going to do that I haven't read?
He better
in this
be.
Article?
But here's the thing: they're just trying to, what they're doing is they're trying to be very sneaky and capitalizing. Wasn't like a week or two ago that I said the NBA has just required all their teams hire someone just like this, because I kidded about who the Rockets should get to do that, so they actually had some responsibilities over there. So the NBA has already thought this out, and that's something that they had on the table that every team was supposed to do. Texans just beat everybody else in the NFL to doing it, and because they actually physically are going to hire someone, they're capitalizing on the media that comes with it as being the first team to do it. So the ironic thing to me, too, is it says the person hired will report to Texans coordinator of medical administration, Jeff Kaplan, who happens to be my old roommate, who happens to be the old on-the-field trainer under Gary Kubiak and others, who wasn't a Bill O'Brien guy. So Bill O'Brien had removed mid-season last year, but they didn't fire him. They kept him around and kind of gave him a new responsibilities, and they restructured his job duties. Now he's going to be in charge of hiring the facilities hygiene coordinator.
Look, if there's substance to this position, you know, by all means, fine. I mean, we obviously need to, you know, try to get over this pandemic as quickly as possible and make sure it doesn't kind of re-spark in any way, shape, or form. But I just don't know what he could tell players to do that, you know, the news and everybody else has been educated on. I mean, you know, you wash your hands, you wear a mask, social distancing, try to keep your hands away from your face. I mean, tell me what he's going to do that perhaps, you know, that we're not, you know, as a society and as adults, we should be doing on our own. But I mean,
here's the thing. You don't want to hire any football people. You're just relying. You're going to be the general manager as well as the head coach. Jack Easterby is going to be your right-hand man who has experience being a team chaplain and kind of a player development type guy, and all of a sudden he's going to be your VP that, along with, you know, that's going to be right next to you to make all these pertinent decisions. I get it. This is a smart decision in terms of handling this pandemic, but it doesn't cover how the two of them have handled every football decision in the last, say, 18 months.
Yeah. Well, they're willing to spend money. Look, if it serves as a real deterrent, and nothing in the article that I've seen, maybe in the SBJ article, I can probably get more information out of it, but I haven't read it. You know, there's just, maybe it does serve as a real deterrent to the coronavirus, but until then, I don't see why you would need that. You have a medical staff, and the medical staff, in my opinion, should be responsible. I don't know why you would need to create a
whole. Well, I can tell you why they need it, Nicholas. I mean, the biggest thing why they need it is because of the fact that it's going to be so hypercritical as a league, let alone as an organization, that you don't have any cases pop up if you do start allowing the team facilities to get repopulated with players and coaches and congregating with large numbers of people, because we already go back to the episodes in sports. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were one of them, where all of a sudden there was this huge issue, and I want to say their kicker actually filed suit for it, because they developed, what's it called when it's not completely clean in the locker room and you can develop some kind of a, not necessarily a disease, but your skin gets infected and you get all this. It's staph infection. There you go. That staph infections for a while there were a big issue in professional sports. And so franchises had to kind of bring people in to make sure that they were over the top in terms of their cleaning, their hygiene around their training facilities and the machines and the, you know, taping rooms and all that other stuff. I think to that degree, and then times 100 when we're talking about a pandemic and something like COVID-19, I think it behooves the league and the teams to do everything they can, because one positive test within one of those teams that starts practicing again is going to set the whole league back. So I think they have to have someone like this. I just think it's ironic that they're getting someone like this, but they can't get the right football people in there to do things that take things out of Bill O'Brien's hands.
Yeah, and what you're saying makes sense. And I think the big difference between a staph infection and the coronavirus is that, you know, staph infection has been around for a very long time. So there have been labs and cultures done, and they've been able to educate themselves on that for a really, really long time. We're in the middle of the educating process right now within regards to coronavirus and what it could potentially do to you. And it's just different. So I guess, there is room to have, I guess, somebody specialized in, you know, only attacking one issue. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, how much this helps. But I will tell you this, I've been in plenty locker rooms, and I know, Joel, you have as well.
Yeah.
You can tell the audience how hygienic the locker rooms. I mean, the locker rooms are in any of the sports.
Short of the guy that comes in with the power washer spray thing. I mean, the cleaning facilities and the cleaning crews in the arenas are doing it before games, after games. You know, spraying things down. They do their very best. Do they have someone that's like, this is their sole focus so that they could take it to another level? Most teams, no. But because of going through something like this, chances are more teams than not will consider it. Whether they do it or not, I don't know, with the finances. But I can see them hiring not just a cleaning crew. They'll hire someone specifically like the Texans are doing just to kind of cover their butts, because this is a lawsuit. Like I said, the kicker for the Buccaneers, I believe it was, sued the franchise for the staph infection and said it set back his career.
Oh, so, I mean, I can totally see that happening, because I've seen that in MMA gyms as well, where, like, you know, it's a bad look, right? Because, again, staff has been around. So, like, when an MMA gym, is known or notoriously known to have staff infections, or a particular UFC fighter continues to get staff infection and has to pull out of a fight, people start get weary of that particular gym because it requires a lot of cleaning to help prevent that. And some people are just too lazy or don't have the money to do so. So, yeah, I mean, I get that. I totally get that, because I've been to several MMA gyms and jiu-jitsu gyms. Mm-hmm. Jiu-jitsu gyms are kind of notorious for that, because you're on the mat the entire time. It's, you know, a non-striking sport, you know, and you're on the mat just rubbing up against the mat the entire time. So, look, I guess I can't super criticize them for doing it. They are, you know, creating a new position, basically, almost a new industry because of a pandemic. I just hope it serves as a legitimate deterrent for the coronavirus.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know, man. I think it's going to be a trend that more teams are going to do. Obviously, the NBA is focused on it. So the Texans making that hire. And then news that the schedule is going to come out Thursday. So they already canceled the international games, but the NFL has already said, look, they're open to and realize they're probably going to have to alter the schedule once it comes out. But Thursday is the day they're going to come out with their wish list schedule for everybody, and then they will adjust accordingly as we get closer to the season. So just mark that on your calendars. As we get to Thursday of this week, we should have an NFL schedule and a Texans schedule to talk about. We'll just see how realistic it is once it comes out, because, you know, if you go along the regular schedule that they're going to put out, then there's going to be NFL games in September, you know, starting with the 1st of September. I just don't know how that happens.
Yeah, and I would imagine it's going to be some sort of flex schedule in that they can change things last minute. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they just can't. I mean, obviously they want something put down on paper and documented, but, you know, I just, you know, it's going to be hard for me to see the NFL stick to every game that they have on that schedule or even close to it.
Yeah, it is. But again, of all the leagues, the league that's been the luckiest so far and had the ideal circumstances is the NFL, with not playing games, being able to, you know, capitalize for free agency and the draft and get all the attention because nobody else is playing. It's set up beautifully for the NFL. So why not at least put it down and make a big deal and get more publicity out of the schedule release, knowing full well you may have to alter it, but for the time being, you're going to get a ton of media coverage, more than you normally would. So we'll see how it all plays out as a league, but for right now, the NFL is the one league that is really coming out smelling like a rose in terms of looking great and still doing what they've been able to do. Baseball still thinking about and trying to get to somewhere in late June or early July for a schedule. I don't know. I saw everybody's favorite, Astros fans' favorite, John Boy, putting out there that according to sources that he knows, that it looks like they're trying to start some kind of a spring training in early June that will lead into the start of the season before the start of July. I hope that's the case, Nick. I just, like we talked about yesterday briefly, I don't even care if there's fans in the stands or not. I still think it's too risky medically to be, you know, trying to get all this done.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. But it just seems like if the NFL is really moving forward with their schedule, it's funny how this is all panning out. Of the three major sports, you know, the NFL, the NBA, the MLB, the one which I feel, and I would imagine there's a consensus that is the most lucrative, is essentially hurt the least by this pandemic. You know, the NFL, which is just an absolute moneymaker, not in its just in itself, but for the United States, because of all the, you know, economic impacts it has in different cities, is the one sport that will have the least amount of impact in terms of their regular season. I mean, they really lucked out in that situation, because yep. I do think it's too soon. I do think it's too premature. And that's why I think a lot of the stadiums, even when they do open back up, will not be nearly as full, with probably a few exceptions of some fan bases.
I agree with you. Because but here's the other thing, Nick, though. At least when we're talking about football and baseball, they haven't started this schedule yet, so they can condense the regular season as necessary to make sure they get their playoffs in and do things correctly. As we talked about, the NBA is already more than three-quarters of the way down the road. So they're forced to have their most critical point in the schedule be what they have to still get into. So they have to make sure the players are all ready, they're healthy. You know, all these different variables are covered. With that said, I mentioned when baseball is trying to get back on the field and with the NFL with their schedule, now the NBA has said they're very seriously contemplating the start of next season to getting into December so that they can be accommodating, because they know they have to finish this season. So now you're talking about from one league that hasn't, or two leagues that haven't started yet, and the NFL that's just sitting pretty in terms of getting their games in. And now you're talking about an NBA league, which not only will this pandemic affect this season, but it's going to affect the start of next season. And we know Barry used to always say, you know, the NBA doesn't start in my mind until Christmas Day. Well, it's going to get pretty close to that if the NBA is thinking the regular season next year doesn't start till December.
Yeah, I know. It's just going to be so weird how this all turns out. And it's going to be interesting to see how all the commissioners react to this. Adam Silver, you know, Roger Goodell. It's some big decisions have to be made, and there's no way you're going to get a likable decision by all, you know?
Yeah, and there's a likable decision that you're not going to like at all, too, Nick, as part of all of this. We're going to get to it next, as at least one writer thinks that one league might make a major adjustment that will affect Nick Sciarra and others in their opinions of how to go to games. We'll talk about that next as we continue to roll. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Welcome back to The Suspects. Hour number two, ESPN 97.5. It's Nick and myself, Barry, with the day off as we roll you through till 4 o'clock. Someone had the gall to say that we were the Charlie Polillo show because, what, we were a little sportsy? Well, God forbid, on a sports station, we cover some sports stuff. Look, the first half hour was nothing sports-related. We were talking about everything but. So, you know, everybody has their days. You're going to be just fine.
Not our fault you tuned in at the wrong time, sir.
Yeah. So before we get to that whole thing that I was talking about that you're probably going to be offended by, you see Frank Gore signed another deal to play another year in the NFL, this time a one-year deal to back up Le'Veon Bell with the Jets.
You talk about longevity. That's a guy. Lord.
37 years old as of May the 14th. He is the third leading rusher in NFL history. And I uncovered this little nugget that kind of puts it all into perspective for you and for everybody else as it relates to him signing the one-year deal. I went back and they showed, and I tweeted it, they showed like the guys that were drafted at the running back position in the same draft as Gore. And I can't find it was just here a second ago. When you start looking at the numbers and you start looking at the people and how high they were drafted, and the fact that his longevity still has him playing yet another season. I mean, look, with the even if he gets minimum carries, the fact that when he retires, and we had this discussion with listeners who just didn't see the fact that he just did it under the radar. He still made Pro Bowls. He still was an all-pro type player. And had a lot of great years with the Niners, and wherever he's gone, he's been productive. But it's like the Vince Carter syndrome. When you play long enough, you're going to get recognized and go to the Hall of Fame when you put up the numbers he's put up.
Yeah, I think just on sheer numbers, that totally works on, you know, that works in his advantage, 100%. But, you know, I've always thought it's so hard to evaluate running backs, you know, in this league. But maybe, you know, some people have an eye for it that, you know, that perhaps I don't. Maybe Jason Braddock would disagree with me here. But one thing I think you absolutely cannot foresee is whether or not you are injury prone or whether or not you're going to be sidelined. Sure. And we know Tua is a guy that's dealing with that, you know, criticism left and right for the past, I don't know how many months right now. You can't predict that. You can't predict that. And Frank Gore, you know, despite having some injuries here and there, he's been a guy who's been able to stay on the field, and it helps him. So I'm not shocked. I think a one-year deal is something you're going to see more often than not with Frank Gore for the remainder of his career just because of his age.
This has got to be close to it, doesn't it?
I would imagine. I would imagine. But
okay,
I mean,
so here's the list for you, all right? He was drafted in 2005, all right? So I'm going to give you five guys drafted ahead of Frank Gore and the year that they were done in the NFL. Basically, the most productive was Ronnie Brown out of Auburn. He was the number two pick in the draft. He played 9 years and retired in 2014. Cedric Benson of the University of Texas was taken at 4. He played to 2012. Cadillac Williams, also of Auburn, taken at number 5, played until 2011. J.J. Arrington was in the second round at number 44. He played till 2008. And Eric Shelton had a one-and-done career, done in 2006. Frank Gore was taken with the 65th pick in the 2005 NFL draft, and he will be playing again in 2020.
So you just,
that's just incredible.
It really is. It really is. And it just goes to show that, you know, the human body is so sophisticated and it's so complicated that it's just so hard to, you have to go based on talent, and then you have to kind of go by how many games played and how many minutes he's playing and he can handle in one single game, because you just can't foresee that. I mean, I was when I was producing for The Blitz, I was talking about how, you know, the whole finger, Michael Jordan's finger on the documentary and how gross it looked. And we kind of went through a bunch of gruesome injuries that happened to athletes in the past. And we mentioned Kevin Ware, and we mentioned Paul George, and we mentioned Alex Smith. And I was, as I was, you know, mentioning all these names, I realized the only one that really came back from such a gruesome injury was Paul George. Alex Smith, who knows how he's going to turn out? He's been gone. Kevin Ware,
it's a good call.
He's
dude,
never
by
been
the way,
same. You know,
the same way you told me to watch the ZZ Top documentary on Netflix. Have you seen the Alex Smith 30 for 30?
No.
Oh my God!
I didn't even know that existed.
Oh my God! So it aired. It debuted Friday night, I believe. They replayed it Saturday. I taped it and I watched it Saturday. Dude, you thought my leg was ugly when I went through everything with my calf this year. You look at what he went through. 17 surgeries. Just they thought he was going to die. It got infected so bad that most of the surgeries were to try to take care of the infection. It's graphic, Nick. Like, they show you the leg when they had to strip it down because of all of the flesh-eating bacteria to just, like, the shin bone and whittled down all of, like, the different ligaments and things like that. And it was, like, the size of my wrist at one point. They thought they were going to die. Then they thought he was going to have to amputate it. And then, just like I said, most of the operations were about the infection. Then when they looked at what they had to do because, and this was against the Texans when J.J. Watt sacked him, that it was like a Theismann-esque injury without it coming through the skin. They showed the amount of screws in his leg when they tried to put it back together. Bro, I mean, when you watch that thing, don't have eaten lunch before you watch it. Oh, my goodness.
Bless his heart. And this is a guy that wants to go back. I mean, look, he's probably a lot mentally tougher than I am. And, you know, I hope, you know, you can't, you know, he's probably not going to go out down as the great. And one of the knocks, obviously, he's never won a Super Bowl. But you got to respect what he's done in the game. He's been labeled
but
a
like
game
Barry
manager,
and I were talking but, about, when you've made over $100 million in your career and you've gone through what he just went through, look, toughness is off the charts. You're absolutely right. And the 30 for 30 is called Project 11. But when you look at it and you start thinking about, because he's got the right perspective too, which is amazing because a lot of athletes, this is all they know, so this is all they want to do. But when he says, I want to be able to walk, I want to be able to be there for my kids and have fun with them and everything like that. But at one point, the Redskins doctor gets a call from or sees his wife as he's still going through all of this, and this leg is just running nuts with infection. And she says to the doctor, what would you do? And this is before any decision's been made. And as a team doctor, you're probably not supposed to say this. She basically says, I'd have it amputated. I'd cut it off.
Unbelievable.
It's just crazy. And then, because, you know, he has those halos with all the screws from his knee down to his ankle to keep everything in place, and when he finally gets it off and then has to try and walk again and run again and how it feels. And dude, I mean, seriously, you want a motivational story, watch Project 11. It's just, it's incredible. It's a really fascinating. And it's like you said, it's like the ZZ Top thing. It's only a one-time thing. I want to say it's an hour long, very much well worth it. I saw Lewis Riddick tweeting about it going, if you're not an Alex Smith fan now and you don't understand how tough he is, whoo.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give him credit. I mean, the things that he's gone through, that's crazy. And look, I mean, you probably will like this, but Aaron Rodgers, I mean, when he had that shoulder issue, right? Didn't he have like several screws and nuts and bolts put in his shoulder? That's not easy to come back from.
No, and especially like you said, I mean, a lot of these guys, they've really been able to coast through their whole career. They've been better than everybody athletically, so they do. You know, they just kind of have had this meteoric rise, and then, you know, how they handle injury says a lot about how they are as a human being with their real toughness when you start facing, you know, less than easy times. That tells you how they're going to be in a lot of ways. And dude, Alex Smith is a warrior. He is tough as nails, and it's a hell of a story. If you haven't seen it, it's worth your time. All right, with that being said, that's the first half of the show. Still got 90 minutes to go, so the second half comes up around the corner, and we can continue to roll on. Call us, be a part of the show, 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text that HRP listener line, or you can hit us up on Twitter. It's the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
90 in the books, 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Tuesday in the big city. Barry out, Nick in. We appreciate you guys rolling with us on a hot day in Houston. As we were talking about a lot of different subjects today, we went from the Blue Angels to the Rockets to the potential Tom Thibodeau hiring for next year, as a rumor is out there, to some Texans and NFL news, and then the documentary on Alex Smith. But PJ has been holding patiently. He wants to get in here on some of our Rockets chatter today. PJ, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Joe? How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I just started watching the MJ documentary, and yep, watching the MJ with Doc Collins, to me it feels like MDA is like, it's like Doc Collins for James Harden. So what do you think would be Phil Jackson to the Rockets that could be a possibility?
So Phil Jackson, not Doug Collins?
No, because to me it feels like MDA is like our Doc Collins for MJ.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, Harden. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So you're those comparing be, Doug Collins to D'Antoni, and then talking about Phil Jackson. Look, from a perspective of a good scenario, a Phil Jackson-type scenario, we've talked about this in the past. We talked about it with Kevin McHale. Red Auerbach had a huge issue with Phil Jackson breaking his records because Red did it all with one franchise and built from within in the draft and all the different things he did and stayed in one spot. Phil has been right guy in the right place at the right time, had Scotty and Michael, had Shaq and Kobe. He could have Russ and James. But I think, honestly, after the debacle that was Phil Jackson to the Knicks and the way that he showed that as much as he knows coaching, he wasn't a good general manager. He didn't make good moves. A lot of people feel like he set that franchise back another decade with the way he handled things. And his age and the fact that he's gotten real comfortable kind of going into seclusion in Wyoming or wherever he goes. I think his time has passed, and I think with the younger players, the fact that the triangle was really, really good during the way most teams played in the NBA. I think now that you're playing so up tempo, threes are greater than twos. A lot of teams, you know, like the Rockets, don't even shoot the mid range. There isn't a big man on the floor. I don't know that Phil's philosophies would be as effective in today's game either. But I don't know, Nick. I don't know how you feel. I just don't think Phil Jackson would be a guy. One, I don't think he would do it, and I don't think he'd fit right.
I don't think he would. I would agree on both fronts. I don't. I mean, we talked about how he didn't want to travel as much. He's just not. He's just not in his prime in terms of coaching. And I just don't think it would be a good fit at all. And again, I bring up the whole James Harden personality and whether or not guys like James and Russ could work with a guy like Phil. Not to blame, point the finger at any one of them. I just don't know how that would work. So, Phil, if he made a comeback, I think it would be, if he ever leaves and makes a comeback again and again and again, I feel like it's always going to be a front office job.
Yeah, and again, like I said, his track record for the Knicks gig, I don't know that many teams are going to hire him for a front office job. And, then the question in my mind becomes, if you are going to move on from Mike D'Antoni and I think we can all agree Tibbs would be a tough fit here, then who is the right fit here and who's available? Because there's been a ton of guys that have been retreads over the last several years when you talk about, the Mike Malones and Luke Walton and all these different guys that keep getting opportunities. Who's that up-and-coming guy or that ex-player that's paid his dues as an assistant coach that can come in? Because, look, we've seen it fail miserably with guys that went right from playing to coaching. Derek Fisher being Exhibit A, Jason Kidd did okay, but I think that you have to have someone that's a little bit more polished, but you also have to have someone that the players respect, that isn't too far down the age scale to where people think it's passed him by and he doesn't get it anymore, and have that disconnect like McHale had with Harden. It's a tough question in terms of who's out there that could. I'll throw a name out at you, Nick, just off the top of my head as I was talking about it. He's not free per se, but he's a guy that has experience with your two best players, and he has a history with your franchise. Scott Brooks would be a guy that I think could come in here and maybe be effective simply because he's coached Russ and James with Oklahoma City. He has a history with the Rockets, so he understands the city, the fan base, and a lot of the idiosyncrasies going in. And I think he's still in touch with today's NBA.
Totally forgot about that guy. You know, former Rocket, obviously a really big professional. You make a good point in the fact that he's coached Russ. Now, when he coached Harden, he wasn't the James Harden of today, but he obviously has some sort of relationship, I would imagine, with James Harden. And I would imagine it's not a bad one because he wasn't the star. He wasn't the man at that time. So that's kind of a sneaky good name. I didn't think of it. I've always thought that a guy that's never played in the NBA, that's kind of younger, dorky, like a basketball nerd, that can, you know, let James Harden can, you know, make fun of him and work with him. And a guy that does well with Harden shutting down ideas that he brings to the table would be a good coach. A guy like Eric Spoelstra, I'm not saying him, I'm saying a guy who never played in the game, but is just an absolute basketball mind, kind of a dork, and can deal with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. I would rather go with someone like that than a big name for the Houston Rockets.
Only thing I'd say about that, Nick, is the fact that you can't have someone the players feel like they can push around because he's nerdy. Like, Spoelstra played college at the University of Portland, and he knows the game and all that, but you're right, never played NBA level. His dad was a marketing genius that created the whole marketing concepts behind professional sports. But when you look at what would fit with this team, I think the one thing you got to be careful about is, and that's where J.B. Bickerstaff kind of got off on the wrong foot. If you remember when McHale got fired and Bickerstaff was going to fill in, Dwight Howard had like either a birthday party or a Christmas party. And as the coach, you have to draw lines. Like, you want good positive relationships with your players, but you can't have the players see you as an equal. And at that party, video surfaced that was all over social media that J.B. Bickerstaff started drinking with the players, dancing on stage with the players, you know, getting all wild, you know, and letting loose with the players. And at that moment, we all took a step back and went, well, he just lost the team. Because now the locker room looks at it and goes, you know, he's just one of the fellas, so we can do what we want, say what we want, and, you know, as long as we stick together, we're going to be good. As a head coach, you still have to have that authority, and I think he lost it that night. I think that's why it's so important that maybe you can't go as far back as the McHale Celtics and get that older, old-school kind of ex-NBA experience, but you got to get someone that the players respect, as you mentioned, that's either played in the NBA or done things at a certain level to where you know that they know what they're doing.
I tend to agree, and I tend to feel like a guy that they can, you know, that doesn't necessarily demand all that power and authority would help someone like James Harden. You know, a guy that really wants to prove himself. And look, it could totally backfire because he gets absolutely stepped on by some of the stars that are in the league. That could happen. But a guy who's a nerd but has a strong enough like personality, like a great basketball mind, but has a strong enough of a personality to respond to a guy, to a star like James Harden, it might help. Now, that's not to say that I don't think Scott Brooks is a good option, because I do. I don't think Tibbs is a bad coach. I just don't know how he
will mesh. I don't think he's a bad coach, but I think he's a disciplinarian.
Right.
And he's a dictator. And I don't know, you know, it takes a certain personality on the player's part to be able to deal with a dictator and then listen to him. And if he pisses the player off too many times, they'll tune him out. So, you know, you look at it. And then I'll throw another ex-Rocket at you as a guy that's paid his dues and just get your opinion on a Sam Cassell. Sam Cassell has worked with Doc Rivers in Boston. He's worked with Doc Rivers with the Clippers. He's dealt with superstars on his team that were very good teams. He's an ex-Rocket. He's a name in the city. I, you know, much along the lines of how Tyronn Lue was a disciple of Doc, won a championship with the Cavs. I don't know what other people think, but I think Sam Cassell is a guy that Mario Elie's even been with me on that said Sam deserves a chance at some point. And I think that Mario's a guy that gets sold short, too, because he paid his dues for a lot of years. One year in the offseason, you and I have talked about, he was the leading candidate amongst guys that were assistant coaches the year before to get interviewed for jobs. And his team went too far in the playoffs. He didn't get a gig, and all of a sudden everybody forgot about him. But when you start talking about even guys that had that connection to the franchise but still have a little toughness to them that aren't going to take crap from their best players or any of their players, I think there's two names that could also at least be interviewed.
Oh, without a doubt. Obviously still connected to the game, watches basketball. And I'm talking about both of them, Mario Elie and Sam Cassell. You know, those guys are not disconnected from the game in any way, shape, or form, have been there, have won it all. Yeah, I mean, there might be guys, if they're you know, a part of the game is while you're retired and while you're not a coach, is to kind of build relationships with some of these players in hopes of, you know, them recognizing you as a good potential coach for the team. And I think there's some players that are overlooked and some former players that are overlooked. And I think Sam Cassell and Mario Elie are definitely two of them. So, look, there's a bunch of names out there that we're probably not mentioning. But you always have to consider who's on your roster, not just from a personality standpoint, but from a skill standpoint as well, before you make that hire. And you know that as well as anybody.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there as two guys that should. I think Mario Elie, for years now, should have at the very minimum been an assistant coach on this Rockets team. I think it, for a lot of reasons, because the Rockets have kind of disconnected from everybody else in the fact that Daryl picks the assistants and he doesn't let his head coach pick the assistants. I think that can become a problem. So I think that when you look at it, Mario should be an assistant, because the one thing that I witnessed over all my years, both as a player and then when he got into coaching, Mario doesn't take crap from anyone. And he has that toughness factor on the bench that you need. Because a lot of the head coaches, they're so worried about relationships, they don't want to discipline their best players. So their assistants are supposed to do that for them. Mario's a guy that from the time he was running off-season workouts at Westside Tennis Center with Tim Duncan, the Rockets players, guys that made their home in Houston in the off-season, he would referee the games. And if he made a call, if anybody bitched about it, he'd sit them down. He'd throw them out of the gym. He was like, I'm making a call. If you don't like it, tough. Here we go. And he had the respect of everyone in that gym. And I think that could go a long way in today's NBA. I think he deserves it. I think that Sam Cassell deserves it. So real interested to see how it's all going to play out. But those are two names. If you guys have names you want to throw out into the mix that you think would be good candidates for a Rockets head coaching job next year, 713-780-3776. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. It's The Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
We're back. ESPN 97.5. Back on the rodeo as my daughter.
The rodeo.
Both in the car, Nick heard it during the break. I'm in the office with the door shut, and there's a glass door. And Taylor just comes storming in. I said, who can come in here? And she says, Mommy said that you would be, like, not on the rodeo right now. So she does refer to the radio as the rodeo.
That's fantastic.
But she does listen, and when we drive around in the morning, if one of the commercials I voice comes on, right away she yells Daddy and knows Daddy's voice. So it's Daddy on the rodeo.
On the rodeo. We still got a we don't have that caller yet. We got to look that up later.
Yeah, we got a lot of suggestions on who should be the next coach of your Houston Rockets. Penny Hardaway is a name from Gary on Twitter. And then a lot of text message coming in. Kelvin Sampson, who I think you could do a lot worse. Kelvin Sampson had a very, very strong relationship with James Harden when he was an assistant with the Rockets. He was the runner-up to the coaching job that Kevin McHale got with the Rockets and then selected by Daryl Morey to still be on the staff, which made everything awkward. But Sampson did a hell of a job when he would fill in for McHale, and obviously he's done a fantastic job at U of H. So there's a name to consider there. Also, some of the other names that were coming in, Mark Jackson, due for a second chance, hoping that he learned some things after the way he exited with the Golden State Warriors. So Mark Jackson's name, Becky Hammon, the assistant with the Spurs that has got a lot of people's attention in terms of possibly being the first woman coach to be a head coach in the NBA. So there's another name out there that someone threw out.
What if I said I'd rather Becky Hammon more than Mark Jackson? I don't know if Mark Jackson would be how do you feel about him?
Mark Jackson had some real issues that I'm aware of with that Warriors team.
With Draymond Green in particular, right?
Some with players. Some he had a lot of trust issues. I know of several stories where he was spying on his coaching staff because he thought they were spying on him. He was a very religious guy, and I think there were rumors out there that he tried to force religion on his players to some degree in terms of, you know, some players just don't want to pray or think about things that way. So, like I said, if he's learned from his mistakes the first go-around, there's no doubt he knows basketball. I mean, ironically, he played with Bill Wennington and Chris Mullin at St. John's. Wennington, who we had on the show yesterday. He knows the game. He's still around the game. He broadcasts the game. He's a name that people know. I think he deserves a second chance. I'm not sure this is the right fit for him, but I would definitely interview Mark Jackson. I'll say that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'll have an interview. I'll have a discussion and a sit down with Mark Jackson. I'm just not sure if I would consider him as a candidate. You know,
someone said Tim Duncan. Where are you on that?
I mean, I think he's kind of groomed for the Spurs. Let's be real. I mean, I think he would be a great coach. I think he has the patience.
Really?
I think he could.
A great coach.
I think he could be. I mean, the potential. I mean, I think he understands the game well. He's still attached to it. He's young enough. He knows a lot of the players that are in the league right now. I mean, he did like a little substitute teaching gig for Greg Popovich in one of the games, and I felt like he did.
Yeah.
Okay. He gave credit to everybody else around the staff, but I mean,
I think he's got a lot to learn. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's kind of where Derek Fisher was when he was just thrust into trying to be a head coach. I think that a little bit more seasoning for him might be the right scenario, but I think that, you know, there are plenty of guys, a lot of them that we just named, are out there to be considered as being guys that could do a good job for this team. Because, again, granted, this isn't just like every other situation, and you're expected to win right away with a roster that a lot of people believe is above average, and two big name, big ego, celebrity-type superstars in Russ and James. And Chance even tweeted us and said, we may have to be honest, and also maybe James won't listen to anyone. That is a possibility. I mean, at a certain point, you may have to look at James Harden as being a me guy that just is never going to win a championship because he's not willing to do what, like we saw with Jordan when Phil took over the team. Do less to win more. I don't know that James is that guy. I don't know if he's there yet with that frame of mind. Well, that's to be remain to be seen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's completely embraced that mentality just yet, but it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see who ends up being the head coach of this team. I don't know how Mike D'Antoni feels right now, but I would imagine not too great. But it's just a report about them, you know, pursuing them. I mean, I don't know.
And on the flip side, Nick, I'll ask you this because it is a tough situation. I don't think it's Mike D'Antoni deserves to be in this situation. But should the Rockets go in another direction, does Mike D'Antoni get another job? Will someone else hire Mike D'Antoni?
I think he could. I think he could still get the job. I think it would have to be a gig that, you know, is comfortable for him and his wife, I think. But I think there might be a team.
He's getting up there in age. He's starting to get labeled as the guy. Stephen A. has been a huge critic of his system doesn't work and doesn't win playoff games. I can see it if it's a middle of the road team trying to get a guy that can kind of maybe take another step but not be expected to win a championship. Or I could see it being this is his last gig before he fades off into the sunset.
It's going to be interesting to see how much he has left in the tank. He's respected. We just don't know how much he wants to do and what teams will even offer him anything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm really curious to see how it all plays out. So there's a Rockets talk on a Tuesday in Houston, Texas. So we've got plenty of other things to get to. We kick around some more NFL. Again, I got to get back to this thing that I told Nick he's not going to be happy about that's being kicked around in the NFL. So stay tuned for that and a whole lot more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.